the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light, the National Broadcasting Company, and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Brandeis, was written by Morton Wishengrad and is the fifth in a series entitled Judgment and Justice. I have a story to tell you, but you cannot understand my story unless you understand this fact. And the fact is this: every step you take toward the future leaves behind a footprint of the past. And there is no escape from the past, nor should there be, for a man cannot escape his heritage. If it is good, he may redeem it, but no more. I know this. You must know it. In the year 1910, in the 54th year of his life, Louis Dembitz Brandeis knew it also. What are the things a man may not forget? I say to you that I may not forget that I am pursued by the Middle Ages like a neurotic haunted by a phantom dream. My days are warm with the memory of 3,000 years of civilization, but my sleep is fitful with a cry of 2,000 years of persecution. And both by day and by night, I am a Jew. And this is a fact sealed in my flesh like the covenant of Abraham. Now I shall tell you the story. On a day more than 50 years ago in the city of Boston, I sat in the offices of the firm of Brandeis, Dunbar, and Nutter and listened to a man with blue eyes talk to two visitors.
Mr. Kelly, what is your grievance? Why do the shoe workers threaten this strike against my client, Mr. Williams?
It's pretty simple, Mr. Brandeis. The men can't live on what they get.
Oh, Williams, is that true?
You're my lawyer, Brandeis. You know I pay my men $18 a week. For these times, it's not a bad wage.
We ain't denying that, Mr. Williams. It ain't a bad wage.
You do admit that, don't you?
Sure, we admit it, sure.
Well, then why do you want a strike?
We want more money, that's why.
Brandeis, I told you there was no point in asking him here. The workers are unreasonable, absolutely unreasonable.
Mr. Kelly, let's be clear about this. You admit that Mr. Williams pays a decent wage?
Highest in the business, sure.
Yet you want more? Aren't you being a little unfair?
No, sir. Ask him about the two long slack seasons when the men are laid off.
Are there slack seasons, Mr. Williams?
Naturally. It's a seasonal industry.
But we don't live seasonal. We live 52 weeks, same as you. Average our fancy pay over the year, and what do we get?
Mr. Williams, I like your figures on seasonal layoff.
Now, look here, Brandeis. I'm a manufacturer, not a settlement house worker.
Don't you think Mr. Kelly has a point to what he's saying?
Then you tell him my point. You're my lawyer. I pay you, not him. Don't forget that little thing.
I haven't forgotten it, sir. But wouldn't it be a rather unfortunate thing for a lawyer to advocate something which he can't approve as a citizen?
Listen, I hired a lawyer, not a citizen.
Perhaps, Mr. Williams, when you hired me, you hired both.
Did I, though?
Yes, Mr. Williams, I think perhaps you did.
All right, Mr. Citizen. You just go right ahead and sit behind this desk. Me? I'm going out to get me a lawyer.
Mr. Brandeis, you talk mighty funny for a conservative.
Funny? I don't think so. There was a time when the working relationship was between master and servant. Today it's between employer and employee. All I want is to make both employer and employee partners. Partners to a contract.
Well, it's still pretty radical for Mr. Williams.
So are Isaiah and Amos, Mr. Kelly. Oh, gives me an idea. Excuse me, Mr.
Sure.
Kelly?
Sure, you go right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis?
Have you finished my holiday list?
Yes, I have, sir.
Please add another item, will you? A book?
Of course, sir. For the children?
No, for Mr. Williams.
Yes, sir.
Inscribe my compliments and please send him a copy of the Bible.
Whitman, suppose you do the talking.
All right, Abbott. Mr. Brandeis, a number of Boston businessmen have organized a committee. A committee that needs some legal advice in a hurry.
Yes?
I believe your firm represents the Great American Assurance Society.
Yes, we handle their local matters.
Do you know much about them, Mr. Brandeis?
Oh, good deal. Why?
Abbott and I are policyholders. Pretty big policyholders. Abbott, tell Mr. Brandeis what you found.
We found something pretty dirty. A few vice presidents have formed a syndicate. They're buying securities with treasury funds.
Oh? Well, if the securities are sound, I don't see what's wrong.
Oh, the securities are sound enough. What's wrong, though, is that they're buying the securities for themselves.
What? Can you prove this?
Look at this. Sworn affidavits.
Yes, they're using other people's money, aren't they?
Brandeis, we know you represent the company. We're asking now if you would want to represent us against the company.
Mr. Brandeis, if this embarrasses you as a lawyer, why, just tell us.
It's embarrassing, all right. I'm embarrassed to be the company's lawyer.
Then you'll take the case?
I'll be glad to, Mr. Whitman.
Fine. We're prepared to give you a retainer of $10,000.
No, Mr. Whitman.
No? Well, they told us you were a good businessman. We'll make it 15.
No, you don't understand. I'll take the case, but without fees. This isn't a private matter, and I don't think I have a right to charge the public for my services.
Well, we can afford to pay, Mr. Brandeis.
All right, Whitman, I'll take half of what you're getting from this.
Well, I'm getting nothing.
Good, I'll take half of that.
Mr. Brandeis, I think I know why your friends call you a liberal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Abbott, what do my enemies call me?
What do you suppose, Mr. Brandeis?
You tell me.
Why, Mr. Brandeis, they call you a Jew.
Louis Dembitz Brandeis smiled to be called a Jew. It was amusing. Had not Uncle Louis Dembitz been one of the three men in 1860 to nominate Abraham Lincoln for president? Had he not himself, as a young man, sat at the feet of Emerson and Lowell? He was the man consulted by presidents, the friend of Oliver Wendell Holmes and William Allen White, and a college president called Woodrow Wilson. Yes, it was amusing to call this tall, slender, blue-eyed man a Jew. His synagogue was a court of law. His scriptures were legal precedents. His altar was social justice. Louis Brandeis smiled a puzzled smile and then dismissed the incident. But it kept recurring.
Congratulations, Mr. Brandeis. You certainly made them crawl back into the woodwork.
Well, I believe I did, Mr. Whitman. You know, there's a good deal of fun in being a public servant, isn't there?
Maybe. Well, anyhow, you got yourself some free publicity in the Tribune. Here, listen to this. Brandeis possesses the rare knowledge of knowing when to stop. When he has exasperated his opponents to the limit of their endurance, he grows gentler than a suckling dove and more... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Brandeis.
No, it's quite all right, Mr. Whitman. No, read on, please.
Just forget it.
No. Please, read the rest of it.
All right. He grows more persuasive than a second-hand clothes dealer who pretends to sacrifice himself to give you a bargain. Well, it's pretty low, Mr. Brandeis.
My friends call me a liberal, and apparently those who aren't my friends call me a Jew. If you'll excuse me, Mr. Whitman, I think I'll have to talk to my friend Filene about this. Mm-hmm. Eileen, have you got a ready definition of a Jew?
Hmm?
Yes, I seem to be in need of a definition.
Well, I don't know who the philosopher was, but someone is alleged to have said that a Jew is like everybody else. Only more so.
I think I'd like to meet some Jews.
That's a real coincidence, Brandeis. How would you like to go to New York and arbitrate a labor dispute?
No, I wouldn't. I've got my hands full fighting the railroad trust. What's the coincidence about the New York thing?
You've heard of the ILGWU? That's quite a mouthful. It stands for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union.
Well, what about them?
The New York cloakmakers are on strike. It happens that many of the workers and employers are Jewish.
Well?
That's your chance to find out something about the Jews. The situation shrieks for an arbitrator.
Yes, it might be interesting at that.
You called, Mr. Brandeis?
Yes, please ask Mr. Dunbar if he wouldn't mind taking my notes and dictating the rest of my Ballinger-Glavis brief. I'm going to New York.
Yes, you see, Mr. Brandeis, in the union, it's a real democracy. Everybody wants to talk. Nobody wants to listen.
Yes, Mr. Doyle, please. If you have no objection, I'd like one of the shop chairmen to present the case.
Okay, Moskowitz, tell Mr. Brandeis, huh?
It's very simple, Mr. Brandeis. All we want is a contract and union recognition.
I thought you were striking for higher wages and the elimination of sweatshop conditions.
Naturally, but the union comes first.
But suppose I were able to get an increase for you, would you turn that down?
Look, Mr. Brandeis, my own boss isn't a bad fella. He came to America on the same boat with me. But that doesn't make him Santa Claus. Today he feels generous, so he gives us a raise. Tomorrow his wife burns the coffee, he gives us a cut.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mr. Brandeis, we want a union.
Right.
That's right.
That's the consensus, Mr. Brandeis. You can tell that to the employers.
Mr. Brandeis, what the workers want is absolutely out of the question.
Then you refuse to sign a contract?
We refuse to recognize the union, period.
Now, that's too bad. I'm afraid the strike will continue.
Between you and me, Mr. Brandeis, I don't want the others to hear this. Maybe if I were a worker, I'd continue with the strike.
What?
You? You don't think I was once a worker? Why do you think I became an employer? Conditions in this industry are terrible.
I'm really amazed. I thought I'd heard all the answers, but this one is absolutely new.
The trouble with you, Brandeis, is that you were born in Kentucky.
Oh?
Now go back and tell those idiots they can strike until they're blue in the face. In Yiddish, there's another way to say it. But you can tell it to them in English.
Stay out, Mr. Brandeis.
Look here, you can't. Some of your people are literally starving.
If it was just for hours and wages, we'd go back tomorrow. But this is a principle. When I was a young fellow in Kishinev, I used to study the Talmud. When I came to America, I found the word I studied. They call it democracy.
Is that what the Talmud is about, Mr. Moskowitz?
Well, they call it something else, but that's what it's about. You know, Mr. Brandeis, it's a shame. A smart man like you should learn a little Hebrew.
I think it's a shame. Someday, perhaps, someone like you should teach me.
Free of charge. If you want a small lesson, here it is. Look, I'm ready.
Huh? It looks like a dentist's chart.
That's Hebrew. It spells a word. I'll say it for you. Tzedek.
Tzedek. What does it mean?
Justice and righteousness. Now, here's another word. Tzedoko. It comes from the word for justice.
Tzedoko.
It means charity. That's a wonderful thing, Mr. Brandeis. In the Hebrew language, the word for charity comes from the word that means justice and righteousness. Here's another word. Tzedoko. It comes from the word for justice.
Tzedoko.
It means charity. That's a wonderful thing, Mr. Brandeis. In the Hebrew language, the word for charity comes from the word that means justice and righteousness. Now, please go back to those fine bosses of ours and tell them for us a little less tzedakah and a little more tzedek.
Mr. Brandeis, don't believe anything that Moskowitz says. At night, he's studying to be a lawyer.
What is Mr. Moskowitz doing today?
He's an operator. Between you and me, he's a botcher. It'll be a fine day for my business when he gets his diploma.
What I can't understand is why your association refuses to negotiate. There's such an extraordinary amount of hostility on both sides, yet there seems to be so much kinship and understanding.
You know something, Mr. Brandeis? When two people are enemies, it's not such a terrible tragedy. But when they're enemies because they both want the same thing, then it is a tragedy. Please, go back and see if you can talk some sense into those crazy lunatics.
Mr. Moskowitz, a wise man knows when to yield.
With the greatest satisfaction, Mr. Brandeis, tell him Moskowitz says he can be a wise man. I give him the honor. Let him yield.
This is the most extraordinary strike I've ever known. It's like a passage from the Talmud with both sides trying to write a commentary.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis, I have a little boy. Papa, he says, what's democracy? Sonny, I tell him, democracy's in the classroom, in the store where Mama buys tomatoes, in the board of aldermen, in the polling place. But for 10 hours a day, it's not in the shop. The boss doesn't have time for it. Please, Mr. Brandeis, tell him the shop is on East Broadway. East Broadway is in New York, and New York is still in America.
And so, gentlemen, you see, I'm a little tired of being an intermediary. I brought you both together.
Like old times, eh, Moskowitz?
The association has approved an increase. Hours will be cut. Shop sanitation will be improved. Mr. Moskowitz, I think these are very generous concessions.
Oh, they are, Moskowitz. We're willing to do whatever we can.
What's the catch?
See, 1 year in law school and he wants to know what's the catch. That's what they teach in law school.
Mister, I know you from the old country. What's the catch?
The association will yield on all demands except union recognition.
Uh-huh. They want to build a fine house for us. The only thing they don't want is that the house should have a foundation.
Moskowitz, don't be a stubborn mule.
Mr. Brandeis, he goes to synagogue. Let him tell me if the words are only for Saturday or if he's supposed to practice them every day.
But he does see things. I think he's making substantial concessions.
Of course.
It's a regular merry-go-round. We want a union. We want a contract. That comes first.
Mr. Moskowitz, I think you're right about this. I recognize it as a lawyer and as an American.
You can say also as a Jew.
On whose side are you arguing?
Since it's going to cost me money, I'll argue on both sides.
Then you are willing to come to terms?
Maybe, but I'll have to talk to the other employers.
Good. It's not a pleasure to be on strike.
Listen, you Talmudist, you. You said enough. Mr. Brandeis, look at him. Do you think he's the only one who can speak a little Hebrew? Maybe I can quote a little, too. Sion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Sion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Don't break your teeth, Mr. Brandeis. Sion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness.
Moskowitz, with a head like yours, couldn't you be a better operator and not such a botcher?
Well, there it is, gentlemen. This is the first collective agreement with enforcement machinery in it. I think it's a fine day's work. Gentlemen, I've learned something from you both. I'm 54 years old. All my life, I've worked for something I call justice, social justice. I came here with curiosity, and I found that beneath all the bickering and the controversy and the passion, there was something the preachers call brotherhood. And I found its expression, perhaps you may not accept this, but I found it expressed in terms of Judaism. For someone like myself, who hardly considered himself a Jew, that means a good deal.
This was a beginning for Louis Dembitz Brandeis. In the 54th year of his life, an idea burgeoning in a great man's mind. A man thinking, applying the scientific method, mixing, compounding, testing the idea, formulating a concept in the crucible of his conscience. Truly, is not this the spark of divinity that makes man only slightly less than the angels? And because he was not a closet speculator, because he was a man of action, he made his decision.
Philemon.
Yes?
I seem to have discovered a heritage.
Yes?
Yes, I want to be worthy of the Jewish name. It isn't wealth. It isn't station. No, nor honor, nor ambition. None of those things. It's like seeing a vision. Knowing that what is mean is not for us. Knowing that we must speak again for social justice and for righteousness. Like Holmes, I would say that self-respect demands that we live not only honorably, but worthily.
But Brandeis, this is what you've tried to be all your life.
Yes, as an American. All my life I've heard people speak of Americanism and Judaism as separate from each other. I know now that it is not so, funny. Place the pattern of Americanism over Judaism. They match. A Jew is an American. In the best, in the truest, in the deepest, richest sense of the word. And Philemon, it makes me very proud.
What man alive has never held up a mirror to his own conscience and said to himself, this is what I truly believe. These are the things I will not compromise. These are the banners I must carry. Without them, I have no integrity. In the summer of 1910, these ideas came to Louis Dembitz Brandeis. The ideas came. He held them in the pan of his brain. He kneaded them like dough. He placed them in the oven of his heart to bake. And when, months later, a rabbi came to him and spoke of Palestine, Brandeis answered,
I am an American rabbi.
So am I, Mr. Brandeis. We are trying to found a refuge in Palestine for Jews who have no other land, the Jews of Middle Europe and Eastern Europe.
Can I, as an American, support such a project?
Yes, because you are an American, Mr. Brandeis.
Rabbi, I have begun to feel that to be a better American, I must become a better Jew.
Carry it further, Mr. Brandeis. I hold that to be a good Jew, you must help fulfill the prophetic vision for the Holy Land.
Perhaps you're right, Rabbi. But I shall have to consider it carefully. If Palestine is to have any validity, it cannot be just another small state, such as a small duchy, Luxembourg, or another Montenegro. It must have a purpose greater than nationalism.
Yes. It can have that. With the help of men like yourself. I know it must.
In the 58th year of his life, virtually in the hour when President Woodrow Wilson summoned him to the Supreme Court of the United States to take his place alongside Oliver Wendell Holmes, Louis Dembitz Brandeis, jurist, moralist, liberal, Jew, American, accepted the cause of Zionism and became its leader in America. And he spoke with the words of Achad Ha'am.
I live for the sake of the perpetuation and happiness of the community of which I am a member. I die to make room for new individuals who will mold the community afresh. When the individual thus values the community as he values his own life and strives after its happiness as though it were his individual well-being, he finds satisfaction and no longer feels so keenly the bitterness of his individual existence because he sees the end for which he lives and suffers. I am an American. And I have come to Zionism through Americanism. Let it be for what the prophet spoke. Let it be only that. Sion b'mishpat tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Israel M. Goldman, spiritual leader of Chizuk Emuno Congregation, Baltimore, Maryland. Rabbi Goldman.
Dear friends, it was thrilling for me to listen with you to this fascinating presentation of several of the dramatic incidents in the life of the great American jurist, the late Justice Louis D. Brandeis. Brandeis stands out as a great American jurist. President Wilson, who appointed him to the Supreme Court of the United States, well characterized his friend when he said, "Brandeis is a friend of all just men and a lover of the right, and he knows more than how to talk about the right. He knows how to set it forward in the face of its enemies." Indeed, Brandeis brought about many practical reforms. He settled the famous garment worker strike in 1910. He championed minimum wage laws, shorter hours for women, trade unions, and workmen's compensation. He fought against railroad and gas monopolies. He protected the interests of life insurance policyholders. He stood out for free speech and freedom of the press. He espoused unpopular causes, which some powerful men and powerful interests of his time disapproved, but upon which time itself has placed its stamp of approval. But Brandeis was not only a great American jurist, he was also a great American Jew. He became the leader of American Zionism and had much to do with furthering the establishment of the State of Israel. When the late Dr. Chaim Weizmann first met him, he exclaimed, "There is something of a Messiah about him." In truth, Brandeis was completely the embodiment of the noblest ideals and highest aspirations of the Jewish people, of which he was so fully a part.
Thank you, Rabbi Goldman. Eternal Life drama today, the fifth in a series entitled Judgment and Justice, was written by Morton Wishengrad. Cantor Dot Robert H. Siegel signed the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Paul McGrath as Brandeis. Others in the cast were Jane Amar, Nat Poland, Joseph DeSantis, William Griffiths, Alan Manson, Santos Ortega, Daniel Acco, and Roger DeCoven. The narrator, Lester Rollins. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light will present The Thief and the Hangman by Morton Wishengrad. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.